This is Report to Wyoming.
In this episode, I'm sitting with the director of the Iris Club, Rebecca Reeves, to talk about mental health. And I'd just like to put a trigger warning at the beginning of this that we do talk about suicide and suicidal ideation.
So my name is Rebecca Reeves, and I'm the director of the Iris Clubhouse here in Casper, Wyoming. I'm also a licensed occupational therapist, and I'm a Wyoming native.
That's awesome. And I didn't know about the Iris. I've been here for 2 years, so where are you?
Yeah, we're located in North Casper at 239 East H Street. We're in, a lot of people know the building that we're in because it was the old Boys and Girls Club. It was also the old boxing club way back in the day.
Do you know how long the Iris Clubhouse has been around?
Yeah, we established as a nonprofit in 2017. We had super humble beginnings. We started in a really small house on David Street downtown, and then we grew and moved to this new building in North Casper.
Was it always a mission to help people with mental health? Has it changed, or was that always the thing?
Yeah, absolutely. It started because a family member, a resident here in Casper, saw the need for additional community mental health resources in our town. And she went to a NAMI conference, actually, and discovered the clubhouse model. And the clubhouse model is very specifically oriented to helping adults who live with a mental illness.
Okay. And the scope of it, it's sometimes people have referred to mental illness as an invisible problem. Like, you don't always know that someone next to you in the grocery store is struggling. So you see it firsthand. Those are the people who have been referred or who have referred themselves in some way. Can we get a grasp on how big this is?
Yeah. I think when we think about mental illness, there might be several different things that run through our heads, but really it's just our brain is working differently. It's it's just like any disease or malfunction of the body. So you oftentimes won't know that someone is struggling with mental illness. And yeah, it affects the way that you're able to function in life, the way you're able to build relationships or work or go back to school. And there's a range, you know, of mental illness. You could have, you know, maybe depression or anxiety. And then you have what's called a serious or persistent mental illness. And those are things like major depression or bipolar disorder or schizophrenia. And those
PTSD.
Yes, it's PTSD Awareness Month.
Is it really? Wow.
Yes.
That was on my mind.
Yeah.
Trauma is such a weird one because it's not, well, they're all different and unique. I shouldn't say weird, but I think trauma specifically is interesting because it happens to you. It's not something that you were born with. It just, and maybe that's a lot of mental illnesses.
Yeah, I think there's varying factors that go into one having a mental illness. There's genetic factors, and then there's environmental factors as well. You know, we hear a lot about ACEs, and that stands for Adverse Childhood Experiences. Those are things like violence in a home, abuse, or a parent divorcing. There's a list of them.
I remember when my daughters were born, they had me fill out an ACEs form. That was the first time I'd heard of it. I don't think in the 90s my mom filled out an ACEs form. So they're taking data now if people are willing to go through that. But, you know, it's voluntary. That's interesting to me as well because it's like, wow, maybe we could do something with this information. It's important to know.
Yeah, absolutely. Because when we have like these negative experiences in our lives or traumatic experiences, it literally changes our brain. It changes our body. And I think research has shown that there's a strong connection between ACEs and the number of ACEs that one has and the possibility of developing a mental illness.
Huh. And what time is there? And again, I'm taking a big paintbrush here, but is there an age or something where this would maybe where you see that people realize they have mental illness or it becomes more apparent?
I think young adulthood, especially for serious, when you're talking about serious and persistent mental illness, the majority of people are diagnosed between the ages of 16 and 26, 28. And you can imagine, like, getting a diagnosis of schizophrenia or bipolar or major depression, you know, any of those big ones at that age, like how disruptive that is, because you're at an age where you're, you know, society, everyone else is going to school, they're building relationships, you're having your first love, and then you get hit with this diagnosis. You might have been experiencing symptoms for a really long time, and your whole world gets turned upside down.
I think it's probably good to find out sooner than later, but I don't know.
So yeah.
It seems like if you can get help, then you're very lucky.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, living with a mental illness is it's a lifelong thing. You know, it's not something that people can just turn on and off. You live a life of recovery when you have a mental illness, and you learn what works and what doesn't work. You try different things. Medication management is really big when you live with a mental illness, just figuring out what magic, you know, right, combination of medication will work for you. And sometimes that takes a long time to figure out.
And then maybe therapy. What other kind of things do you guys do to try to address it?
Yeah, well, at the clubhouse, in contrast to talk therapy, which is definitely important, but what the clubhouse brings is that community support, that a place to provide, to belong, and to provide support and hope for people who live with a mental illness. So, you know, we work side by side. The main tenet of the program is to all the people who are members of the clubhouse, we refer to them as members or colleagues, and we all are working side by side to support the running of the clubhouse. And when you do that, when you work side by side and focus on strengths and abilities versus the diagnosis or the faults, it does something for people. It builds confidence.
Family. Oh, I was thinking like a family almost, like a sort of tribe.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, everyone there is experiencing similar things. So everyone is living with a mental illness. So you have that camaraderie of that, people bouncing ideas off of each other, what's working for them, what's not working for them. And yeah, just having that support system.
It's amazing that I love that you said the word hope, but then I also, when I think of mental illness, I think about love and how powerful it is as an energy source. And I was thinking that today on the way to work, and I was like, I wonder if that is the ultimate medicine. It sounds kind of hippy-dippy, but that's got to be baked in there.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I think love is the, you know, highest form of energy, and it's what ties everything together and what can help.
Well, like heal the world.
Heal the world, yeah.
It's emotional.
Absolutely.
It's kind of intense, even just talking about it. But so I think, when I think about, yeah, people, the sadness and the things that are happening in mental illness, it's like, how do we inject more of that thing that we were just feeling into just the whole world? It's very difficult.
It is. I think just continuing to have conversations like this about mental illness and understanding, like trying to drop the judgments. You know, everyone's actions, there's a reason behind everyone's actions. And just dropping judgments, I think, is the most important thing. And not jumping to conclusions. If someone's acting out, understanding that there's more to it than just the behavior that you see.
Right. They're not just being a jerk.
Right.
Maybe there's something else.
Yeah. And understanding, like I say this over and over again, but understanding that what other people are maybe pushing out and what you see and what you observe have more to do with them than it does with you.
Right.
And when we truly understand that on a deeper level, that judgment and that, it just kind of melts away.
Empathy.
Yes.
It's sometimes hard to do. We're all guilty of judging. And so.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
That's the crux of like healing. But as far as providing hope, it's when you're in the depths of despair, that's a big part of your job too, is kind of uplifting people. How do you do that?
Well, just by providing a space that they know that they're welcome and reaching out to them if we haven't seen them in a while. We have a really awesome reach out system. We contact people every week or every 2 weeks, depending on their preference. But, you know, if we haven't seen them, we're calling them or we're showing up on their doorstep and saying, hey, how are you? Where have you been? Are you good? You know, I think that makes a big difference, just knowing that someone is there and someone cares about you.
It would be so easy to slip through the cracks for anybody. And mm-hmm. just, I watch this podcast called Soft White Underbelly, which mm-hmm. is, have you seen it? Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh. I hope our listeners, if you've seen it, you know, there's so much mental health that needs to be addressed and that he's kind of doing that in a way, but it's also, he's just showing it. And it makes me always realize how lucky it is if you do have a home and you've got your health together, physically and mentally. But in Casper, you see that same thing happening on the streets, and you can't force people to get help. So how do people become a member? How does that work?
We're a referral-based program, and so we get referrals from different organizations like CWCC or WBI. Those are our largest referral sources. And then once we get that referral, we reach out and call the person that was referred and invite them in for a tour. People also just come in and are self-referred, and that's totally fine. And yeah, so that's how people come into the program. And those people who are self-referred, we just, you know, maybe they're not hooked up to psych services or even a primary care doctor, so we can help them get established with those things if that's what they want. But we also see people who don't want that, and that's okay. I think you just have to meet people where they're at.
Gotcha. Do you have any stories, I know you can't use names, but of people that stand out in your experience? Maybe they've moved on, or maybe they're still there, but if you will, a success story?
Yeah, absolutely. There's so many, but one that comes to mind is a gal who came to the clubhouse about a little over a year ago, and she was homeless at the time. She was staying at the mission, and we worked with her and her case managers to get her housed, and she has now been successfully housed for 1 year, which is really huge for her. But after getting to know her and learning her story about, you know, just the trauma that she's received in her younger life and how, you know, different circumstances and environmental circumstances led to a lot of struggles for her. She attempted suicide several times and was in and out of the mental health hospital, I think she said like over 20 times in her adult life. And then, you know, she made her way to the clubhouse, and she hasn't had to go to the mental health hospital, hasn't had, you know, those thoughts of suicide since she's been at the clubhouse. And she says that the thing that really has helped her the most is just having a community to be a part of and building friendships. And for the first time in a long time. She has some really solid friends that she hangs out with outside of the clubhouse, and she now has a job. We have these what we call transitional employment positions in the community, and so she's working one of those. And
purpose.
Yeah, that purpose. Yeah, having, yeah, that's exactly right. Having a purpose, a reason to get out of bed, somewhere to go, and not just somewhere to go, but somewhere where you can be productive, and that productivity really means something. Like, it matters. Like, you're doing work that's meaningful and purposeful at the clubhouse, and it's contributing to a larger purpose. And
this leads me to two different subjects, so I'm gonna name them now. We've got addiction and suicide. It's a lot of these things overlap with things that you would do at a recovery center. Maybe mental illness is exacerbated by addiction, and or it could even be a product of addiction.
Yeah, both. I think it depends on the person. Totally. I think that, you know, when a person is drawn to drugs or alcohol in a way that ends up affecting their life, I think that that's a symptom of not feeling good in your own skin and not knowing how to deal with the different stressors in your life, or not having the tools to. Like, maybe a person never learned the way to deal with tough emotions or just tough things that happen in life.
And some people, you get too many tough things.
Yeah, like too many at once. Yeah, there's so many different, you know, scenarios or situations. But I think that, yeah, when you look at addiction, I think that's definitely a factor. Another factor is, you know, genetics. I think some people are just, they're predisposed. They've had addiction in their that runs in their family. And you could have person A and person B, who, you know, one person might have a few drinks and that's fine. They can just leave it at that. And then the other person, it ends up becoming an addiction.
I don't think we can talk about it enough, because in Wyoming, this is a huge topic. I don't have to tell you or our listeners, we have a serious problem. Whatever we want to talk about, rankings, blah, blah, blah. It's just, this is a problem, even in Natrona County. Our coroner is talking about it. So suicide is the next subject, sadly. But this is the probable worst cause, or the worst end.
Suicide would be probably the worst case scenario for a resident.
Well, yeah, I think that the research shows that community and support and hope, you know, all of those things are protective factors for people. And I think that we all have a responsibility to do something to in that area. Like, whether it's, you know, maybe, you know, for me, I'm running a nonprofit that's sort focused on helping people with mental health and mental illness. But for others who might, you know, just be going to their nine to five, or whatever it is, I guess what I'm trying to say is that everyone has a responsibility to join in on that in some way, whether it's finding somebody to give hope to support, to give words of encouragement to. I think that's a great way to start.
And I know that was a hard question. So I'm speechless as you. I'm constantly baffled by, like, the what do we do about this? What can we do? It's in the wake of everything that's happened in 2024 in Natrona County, it leaves us all pretty troubled that our juveniles are doing what they're doing, that young people are committing suicide. How do we do it? How do we address this? And people are angry. They're going to the school board. They're even tipping the news. We have to do something. Well, what is it? What's the magic thing? And I just keep coming back to love. Like, it's like, I don't know, some kind of spiritual revival.
Yeah.
But it does seem to me it's that those are your practices and strategies, and it helps people.
Yeah.
I think success stories, that's a good thing to hear, that people do come out of it and they are thriving. That's wonderful. And that's, I think, a beautiful thing, too, for people that are struggling with mental illness, is to go, well, no matter how bad it seems, somebody else has been worse, and they probably came out.
Yeah.
I think it's important we talk about the governor's mental health roadmap. And he talked about this a year ago at a women's conference. That was the first time I heard about it. But for our listeners, do you want to just explain kind of what it is?
Yes. So the Governor Gordon has a roadmap to improve mental health care in Wyoming. And there's five pillars that make up this roadmap. And the first one is access to care.
We have so many rural communities, and it's so, even getting access to healthcare, like for my, the example that my listeners maybe have heard is that my twin sister was getting ready to have a baby in Sublette County, Wyoming, and the nearest hospital was 2 hours away either direction. So you have to prepare for maybe a midwife, like any kind of situation.
Yeah.
And in the middle of winter in January, the nearest hospital is Jackson Hole. That's a pretty treacherous. So you get a motel. You most of them induce their labor. Even just having a baby. And so mental health.
Yeah.
I love that Gordon is on top of this. It's a very lofty thing that we haven't quite figured out yet.
Absolutely. And I think that most rural communities are in the same boat, because, and I think that's where this other pillar, innovation, comes in, is that we have to think outside of the box. How can we bring innovative solutions to tackle these big problems like access and affordability? You know, we don't want to have too much government, but we would, you know, not to get too political, but we need innovative solutions. And, you know, telehealth is up and rising. Maybe that's something that, you know, we can look at. But then we also can't forget that connection and that community is so important.
That is right. The internet. And I think about, you can do counseling on Zoom, or if you need to go to like an online AA or whatever it is. I just like to throw that out there for people. It's available. You can do it online. And in some ways, I think that's, it just makes it more accessible. But some people, it's more doable. Even if you're not in a small town or you have plenty of income, it's still more accessible if you have a scheduling, whatever it is. Okay, what's the, so accessibility. And then what are his other points of attack?
Being able to afford the services once you have access to them. Mental health care, like we have CWCC here in town, and they have a sliding scale. I know that's changed with some things have changed with that, but they do their best to ensure that everyone has access to their services regardless of how they're able to pay. But we do have around 8% of people who don't have health insurance. And it's not just people who maybe are living below that poverty line, but it's also, you know, our middle class folks who struggle to access and be able to pay for these services.
I know. I even think about myself. I have two kids. It's like, gosh, can I afford another bill? But I think about people who are going through something, and I can understand where, what do you, it might be a compromise. Are we now, we have to go to a different daycare, whatever it is. And some people don't have kids even, but we all have bills. And so the mental health, trying to pay for that extra thing as upkeep, it hasn't been done. It's not normalized. So why would you? And you should, I think, but I understand why that's one you go, well, this is a luxury. We'll cut it.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I think that brings to the, there's a, another, you know, part of his roadmap is having that cultural shift of, you know, saying that it's okay to go get help. It's okay to get these services if you need them.
Yeah, people, there's a real, Gordon, I think in his speech that I heard said, the cowboy up culture, it's very good. It's really a big part of Wyoming, but it can sometimes be hard for men especially to be okay saying, I need help.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's totally a cultural thing that we have to work to shift, and what that looks like, I'm not really sure, but I think bringing it back to love, you know, just having that energy, that loving energy, setting an intention to have love guide your actions every day. And yeah, maybe that'll help with that cultural shift.
Some of them would rather eat dirt than talk about their feelings. And
yeah.
So addressing it, we've got a lot to do. And that's part of why we love Wyoming, too. And so seeing the beauty of toughness and grit and all the wonderful things that come with it, but understanding that, yeah, there is a whole other side of it.
And I think also remembering that things like what we're talking about, this takes time. It takes a long time, like whole generations of time to change, especially culture. Culture takes a really long time to change. And so
I think about wasted potential when I think about the suicide and mental health. It's just, it makes me wonder, like, what could have been if all of the people in Wyoming had not done that? How different would things be?
Mm-hmm.
And there's probably no use in that, but the potential. And I just wish that we could stop it, because it's so sad to think that people thought that was the only, that was the best option.
Mm-hmm.
Or the only option, probably.
Yeah, it breaks my heart to know that, like, just to know that someone had that much pain and really believed that things would be better, or that that was their only option, like you said, it's really hard to swallow that.
And for family members, sometimes it's sad, too, because you don't even know it's coming. Lance Nyberger, he's amazing. He won the Cowboy Award, I think, with the Boys and Girls Club. He came and talked on our podcast maybe a year or two ago, and he told his story here. He is someone who lost a child to suicide, and just the not knowing it was coming part. It's like, so we can go over signs, and there's so much information out there. And at the same time, sometimes that's not the case. Like, sometimes it just, it's sporadic and it happens and makes us all very, very sad. And so I constantly will fiercely advocate for a solution that no one can grasp.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. That's going to help. It's a lot of things and a lot of us working together to address it. And there's so many people who are working towards that aim. You know, you have the Natrona County Suicide Prevention Coalition, and you have the Blue Heart Collaborative, which just started up, really diving into addressing it at the youth level, and creating what they call third spaces for youth to be a part of. That's part of the solution. And then you have public health, who's addressing it through a community needs survey, and they have multiple steps that they'll be taking. And then you have nonprofits like Never Forgotten 77, another couple who lost someone to suicide, and they're doing what they can to advocate. JR's Hunt for Life, you know, there's a lot of people out there who are advocating and who are spreading awareness, and it's going to take all of us to do all the things that we can.
This has been Report to Wyoming, presented in the public interest by Town Square Media.